Welcome to Belfast City Vineyard, where we are pursuing formation in the presence of Jesus, community gathered around him, and the impact he empowers us to bring in our families, city, and the world. The following message was given at one of our Sunday services. For more information, visit our website at belfastcityvineyard.com.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you're doing well this morning. If you haven't met me yet, my name is David, and I am one of the pastors here at Belfast City Vineyard. And my primary area of responsibility is over worship. So I guess you can probably figure out what we're going to talk about today. So in particular, we are going to look at this concept of courage to worship with overflowing passion. Let me just let that sink in and repeat that again. Courage to worship with overflowing passion. Now, I wonder what emotions that stirs inside of you. And I'm guessing that there are a multitude of different expressions out there right now. Perhaps it stirs a sense of uncomfortableness or awkwardness. Or on the other extreme, perhaps it fills you with a massive sense of excitement, this concept of being able to worship so freely that you cannot help but let passion just rise up. Well, in our story today, we're going to look at King David and how he was called undignified for his worship. And we've maybe heard that phrase before. And he declares that he will look even more undignified than this for God, for all that he has done for him and all that he is doing. And so what does this undignified worship look like? Now, if you are new to following Jesus, or you're just exploring what that looks like, I will bet that all worship seems a little bit undignified. And I confess, if you have joined us on a Sunday morning in Fleming Fulton before lockdown, it does look a little strange. 300 people staring at a screen with words on it, all singing together with a live band. It's mass karaoke is what it looks like. But you see, worship is not just about singing. See, worship is a posture of our heart towards God. It's a gift to him and it's freely given. And we can worship in a multitude of ways, perhaps even just taking a walk in nature and being in awe of all that God has created and giving him thanks for it. Or perhaps it's when we spend time with our families and our friends and we are just so appreciative of their influence and part in our lives. You see, because it's a posture of our heart towards him, there is no end to what we can invite him into as an act of worship. But when we do gather in a group setting and sing together, there is definitely something powerful that happens. And we call this corporate worship. And in that environment, our awareness of God becomes heightened and we recognize his presence drawing near to us. Some would call it a thin place where heaven and earth overlap. And in this place in BCV, we've actually seen some pretty miraculous things happen. We have seen people healed spontaneously. We have seen people find freedom from a lot of sin that has had a hold on their lives. We've even seen people come up with creative solutions to problems that they've been facing. And not only that, but when we come to worship, whether alone or together, we often find his desire is to pour out something on us. And so we are so thankful to be able to receive his love, his mercy, and acceptance. And this interaction with Father, Son, and Holy Spirit forms something lasting inside of us. See, worship is a formational tool in our spiritual lives. So, in Northern Ireland, we tend to pride ourselves on our restraint quite a bit. But there are times, and we all have them, whenever our guard drops and we simply can't hold back that emotion that's welling inside. And I will never forget a Wednesday night in 2008 when Northern Ireland were playing Spain in Windsor Park. And I'm sure there are many of you who remember this match. It ended 3-2. It was amazing. Right now, I cannot remember what day of the week it is, but I remember this moment as clear as day, and as I'm sure you maybe do too. So the goalkeeper picked out David Healy halfway up the pitch, and he delivered a ball with pinpoint accuracy. It bounced in front of David Healy a few times, and he chased it down the pitch. And then he let loose with a kick from 25 yards out. And what we couldn't see on the screen was that the goalkeeper was off his line. I held my breath for what felt like an age. And the ball floated effortlessly through the air, over the top of the keeper, and into the back of the net. And in that moment, with tens of thousands of people, I jumped to my feet and roared in celebration. There was undignified dancing. And I didn't care what anybody around me thought. I didn't consider my dignity as something to be guarded. Courage to express the emotions that welled up inside was easy to come by. Now, I'm sure that you have a story that is similar in your life. Maybe it was just this week whenever you found out that six people can gather in a house. Isn't it just amazing? I couldn't help but do a little dance myself. And if you are currently gathered with some people watching this right now, how amazing and what a privilege it is to have people together for church. Isn't it wonderful? So anyway, let's take a look at worshipping with overflowing passion, or undignified worship, as it would be commonly called. And this is my definition for you today. Undignified worship is when we have courage to allow our level of passion for God to exceed our level of restraint. And I'll just repeat that for us. Undignified worship is when we have courage to allow our level of passion for God to exceed our level of restraint. Now, we'll talk about the definitions of passion and restraint in a minute, but for now, let me clarify a few things. First, undignified worship is not something that is forced or manipulated. Secondly, I don't believe undignified worship means that you have to dance around. But if that is how you express your passion, then please keep doing it. Don't let me stop you. It's just not something that I have experienced personally. And everybody's undignified worship looks different. Just keep that in mind. Another thing to remember is that undignified worship can look as much like weeping as celebrating. And there will be seasons for all things. To lament in worship, to grieve and suffer, and allow ourselves to be authentic before God is a powerful thing. And we only have to look at the book of Psalms to see this in action. Now, lastly, I want to point out that I am aware for many of us, seeing others worship with abandon can sometimes leave us feeling uncomfortable. And I understand that, but please, let's be very careful to never slip into judgment of others. And as I've said, everyone's undignified worship will look different. So today we are looking at 2 Samuel chapter 6. And there's a lot going on in this passage. And to get the most out of it, we really need to have a look at the context and the history around the chapter. All through the Bible, the narrative is God longs to be with his people. However, we all know what happened in the Garden of Eden when sin entered the world and how it resulted in separation of humanity and God. Now let's fast forward on to Moses leading the people of Israel in the desert for 40 years. And in this era, God establishes a way that he can lead his people directly through the creation of the tabernacle, which was just like a mobile temple. And through meeting with Moses and the priests via the Ark of the Covenant in the space known as the Holy of Holies. Now, it should be pointed out that God was extremely specific about how this should happen. And there was ritual after ritual where blood needed to be spilled in sacrifice in order to sanctify those who would be entering into his presence. God even went as far as to instruct them how to dress in his presence. And then when it came time to move the ark and the tabernacle, he instructed them on how that should be done and who should do it. The ark itself was a wooden box about 4.25 feet long by 2.5 feet wide and 2.5 feet deep. It was covered in gold, and inside the ark were stored the stone tablets that God had given Moses with the Ten Commandments on them, along with several other artifacts that were really significant to the Israelites. On top of the ark, there sat a lid that was made of solid gold and had two solid gold cherubim on top as well. This lid was also known as the mercy seat, as that's where God's presence would actually descend to give instruction to Moses. And again, I want to emphasize, this wasn't like Moses just kind of dandered in, sat down at a coffee table and had a chat with God. There was arduous processes that he had to go through in preparation, and involved a lot of cleansing rituals before anyone could even survive in the presence of God's holiness. Now, for the next 300 to 400 years, God would speak to his people from the ark, until one day the Israelites decided to carry the ark into battle, treating it more as a trophy than as the holy throne of God, or treating it as like a good luck charm. Needless to say, they lose the battle and the ark is captured by the Philistines. They then take the ark back to their country, and long story short, it doesn't go well for them. For 7 months, the Philistines suffered under a number of nasty plagues. So they put the ark on a new cart that's led by two cows and send it on its way with a guilt offering of gold. So a guilt offering is like a payment of reparations for the inconvenience that they've caused. God guides this cart to a town called Beth Shemesh in Israel, where it's kept for a while. And while it's there, intrigue got the better of some of the men from the town, and they decided to open the ark and look inside, and were told that 40 people died. In 1 Samuel 6, verse 20, we hear the response of the townspeople to that event. Who is able to stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? They then moved the ark on to another town called Kiriath Jearim, in the house of a person known as Abinadab. And it's there that it sits for decades. And we read in 1 Samuel 6 that during this time, all Israel mourned because it seemed that the Lord had abandoned them. Now, at this time, the ark and the access to the presence of God is sitting right there. But in their grief and their fear and maybe even their pride, the people lose courage and cry out for Samuel to anoint a king to lead them. And that's when Saul is appointed the first king of Israel. And in 1 Chronicles 13, verse 3, David is recorded as saying that during the reign of Saul, the ark was neglected. Now, once David is made king of all Israel, he establishes Jerusalem as the capital of the country, and it quickly becomes the political capital. But David's heart is to have God at the center leading Israel. And so he decides that he wants to bring the ark to Jerusalem. Which brings us right up to the start of our passage today. And it's a long chapter, so we won't be reading it all, but I would urge you to take some time and read through it for yourself later on. So let's have a look at 2 Samuel chapter 6. And we start with David gathering 30,000 troops to escort the ark to Jerusalem. They place the ark on a new cart and have two oxen pulling it along. There are musicians and there is dancing, and it says all the people of Israel were singing and celebrating before the Lord. The presence of God was returning to Israel. This is a hugely significant moment. It's one of those times where the people's passion far exceeds their restraint. They didn't need a lot of courage. They could not help but celebrate as hope and expectation filled them to overflowing. So far, so good, right? We have exuberant worship happening. The Lord is being reestablished at the center of Israel. All good, okay? Well, not quite. So let's just read for a second what happens in verse 6. But when they arrived at the threshing floor of Nacon, the oxen stumbled, and Uzzah reached out his hand and steadied the ark of God. Then the Lord's anger was aroused against Uzzah, and God struck him dead because of this. So Uzzah died right there beside the ark of God. David was angry because the Lord's anger had burst out against Uzzah. He named that place Perez Uzzah, which means to burst out against Uzzah, as it is still called today. David was now afraid of the Lord, and he asked, "How can I ever bring the ark of the Lord back into my care?" So David decided not to move the ark of the Lord into the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom of Gath. Okay, so maybe this didn't quite go as planned. But what went wrong? Why did someone have to die when their intentions were good? Well, you see, to be honest, it appears that David and the people of Israel had forgotten about God's holiness. The last time that the ark was at the center of Israel's attention was before David was even born. Rather than consult with the priests or ask God what way the ark should be moved, he imitated what he heard the Philistines had done, and he put the ark on a new cart. If he had simply consulted the scriptures, he would have seen it laid out plainly how the ark was to be transported and by who. You see, when God gives us commands, it's not in an attempt to control our lives or to make them feel awkward. There is good reason, and in this circumstance, the reason is to protect the people from the guaranteed death that they would experience when their sin came in contact with the holiness of God. The good news for us today, though, is that by accepting the gift of Jesus' death on the cross, we can courageously enter God's presence and live. Hebrews chapter 10, verses 19 to 22 say this: "And so, dear brothers and sisters, we can boldly enter heaven's most holy place because of the blood of Jesus. By his death, Jesus opened a new and life-giving way through the curtain into the most holy place. And since we have a great high priest who rules over God's house, let us go right into the presence of God with sincere hearts, fully trusting him. For our guilty consciences have been sprinkled with Christ's blood to make us clean, and our bodies have been washed with pure water." If we've welcomed Jesus into our lives, the presence of God that rested on the ark lives within us today. And so our bodies have become a temple, a place of worship to him. Although it's a good thing to do, we don't actually have to be gathered in a room to worship God. We have intimate access to him from our own homes. And what an honor that is. In this season of lockdown, I am sure that we have all realized how many privileges that we had in life previously we took for granted. Well, let's not do the same with his presence in us. Let's celebrate it daily and remember that it is holy. Now, I just want to pause here and remind us what I had said earlier. Undignified worship is when we have courage to allow our level of passion for God to exceed our level of restraint. I guess that many of you have this question on your mind right now. Is David saying that I need to worship in an undignified way to be a follower of Jesus? And what I would say to you is, I think we're asking the wrong question. You see, undignified worship is simply overflow. It's an outward expression that comes from living passionately for Jesus. It shows that we are more concerned with his opinion of us than with man's, and it shows that we are submitted to him. The questions are these: does God want us to be passionate about Jesus? Yes. Does God want us to hold his opinion higher than the world's? Most definitely. See, I don't know about you, but when I see passionate people involved in something, I want to be involved because I know it's going to be life-giving and it's going to be exciting. You see, passion is not just about our formation. It is about the impact that we have on the world around us. It is a witness to the passion of Jesus Christ, and we are to be a light on a hill, a reflection of his passion. So I have this question for you. How are your passion levels in general right now? And I think we can be honest about that in this season. It's going to be hard to be passionate about much, but we probably have those glimpses of hope now about what life might look like soon, whenever these restrictions are lifted further. And passion maybe is rising. But how are you doing with your passion for Jesus right now? Now, some of you may think that my job is all about leading worship, writing songs, and drinking coffee with people. And some of it is. But I have to be honest, my day-to-day looks very different than that. Most of my time is spent planning out spreadsheets and strategizing and organizing training and coordinating leaders. And I have to be honest, that doesn't fill me with a lot of passion. I feel actually quite drained after some days of that. But after a particularly tough year one time, I remember going to a worship retreat and hearing a worship leader speaking. And they just reminded me of why I do what I do. They reminded me of the honor and the privilege it is to lead people in worship. We need inspired every now and again. And it fueled me for the next couple of years of leading worship, at least. And then I needed topped up again. And we just have to continually go back and be topped up and vision to be cast that inspires us to be passionate about Jesus. But where are you fueling your passion for Jesus right now in the day to day? For the Israelites in this passage, they were fueled by hope and expectation of God's presence dwelling with them. And that is significant. Are we as excited by his presence dwelling within us? Are we making space to allow us to interact with him? Or just even to be inspired by him? Now, we have a number of regular touch points through the week in BCV. We have our daily rhythms. We have worship happening all the time. We have our resources webpage. And then we also have our Sunday services, amongst many, many other things. And these are wonderful. But they should never replace you taking personal time alone with Jesus, reading his word, worshiping, and praying. You see, the things we do corporately are good and important, but they should be built on what we do in the secrecy of our own homes. Those things are the foundation for all your spiritual development. And in these intimate places, we find that our passion is stirred. So will you take courage today and maybe just do a little survey of how your foundations are and make sure that they're still firm? So let's go back to 2 Samuel. David just tried to bring the ark into Jerusalem and failed. And now he becomes fearful of the Lord's holiness. And so he sends the ark to Obed-Edom until he figures out what to do. And in verse 9, we hear that after 3 months at the house of Obed-Edom, there is so much blessing and fruit for that family. And so David feels encouraged, and he takes courage that God is with them, and he brings the ark to Jerusalem, and he knows that it's God's will. But this time he learns from his previous mistakes, and he consults the law, and he asks God how the ark should be taken, and he looks in the book of Numbers, and he finds the answer. He welcomes in the priests and Levites to carry the ark in the way that the Bible prescribes. They dress as is required, and there are sacrifices of animals made to cleanse the people of their sins. This time their courage pays off, and the ark is brought into the city. There is joy and celebration and dancing at what is happening, and their worship overflows. But this time they respect and honor God's presence with them. Now, although most of Israel was celebrating the return of the ark, not all were, and in particular, David's wife, Michal. So let's read verses 16 and 20. But as the ark of the Lord entered the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked down from her window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she was filled with contempt for him. And then we read in verse 20. When David returned home to bless his own family, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet him. She said in disgust, "How distinguished the king of Israel looked today, shamelessly exposing himself to the servant girls like a vulgar person might do." Now, Michal was the daughter of Saul and David's wife. She grew up in a position of privilege her whole life, and she watched her father's rise as king and how he reigned. Saul had been removed from the throne by God because of his pride and reluctance to surrender to the will of God. Saul cared deeply about what people thought of him over what God thought of him. And Michal watched this as she grew up. Her entire model for how a king should act was based on her father's example. What she sees David do disgusts her. She probably feels personal offence for the royal family as well, that what his actions reflect on them. She allows her pride, her position, and her traditions to impede the worship of God. David, on the other hand, strips off those royal robes and humbles himself before the Lord. He became a servant to the people and to the Lord by dressing himself as a priest. Do you have courage today to step out of the safety of tradition and what you've seen done previously in worship, to push back the barriers and explore what the worship God seeks really looks like in your life? Undignified worship is when we have courage to allow our level of passion for God to exceed our level of restraint. Now, I'm not saying all restraint is a bad thing. It is good and necessary in order to live an emotionally healthy life. But at the same time, an excess of restraint can actually have a negative impact on our lives. And a few years ago, I learned something perhaps many of you will already know. When we suppress anger, the result in our lives is sadness. During my childhood and most of my teenage years, I was emotionally bullied in school. And yet I thought it was a good Christian thing to not let myself feel anger towards the people who did that, and certainly never express it to anyone around me. That compounded for years, resulting in some pretty depressing seasons in my adult life where sadness overtook my joy. More recently, I have learned that suppression of negative emotions in our lives in general results in us inhibiting our ability to experience positive emotions too. My so-called restraint has robbed me of years of joy. What happens if we constantly restrain our passions and don't ever let them breathe into life? Well, they simply fade. But we're not talking here just about the excess of restraint. We need to consider why we restrain ourselves in the first place. There are positive and negative reasons. I have to be honest, when it comes to worship, the main reason why I restrain myself is because I'm worried about what other people around me will think. I become self-conscious and I get caught up in my own head. But as I said earlier, the place of worship is a formational place. And if I am restraining myself from fully engaging in what's happening, I am simply missing out and stunting my own spiritual growth. I suffer because of my pride. But there are times when courage rises in me. My passion rises and I surrender to undignified worship because I want to express fully my gratitude or my grief before God. David Rees says this in his book, The Worship God is Seeking. We are hesitant to embrace anything that inconveniences or challenges our personal opinions and comfort. An abandoned worship can appear ridiculous. Yet at the core of true worship is a life that gives up everything. It's not about what is in it for us, Rather, it's about being broken and humbled before the King of Eternity as we lay down our lives and agendas before him. See, restraint is about us having control. Worship is about giving him control. To allow our restraint to drop requires courage and will cost us something. It is a sacrifice to God. It's humbling, and it is in itself an act of worship. And I believe that's the worship that God is seeking from us. I also believe that on this island, the people are passionate people. But I'm worried that due to our history, our division, and our pride, our passion is being subdued or else diverted into negative places. I also believe that this community, Belfast City Vineyard, and others like it, can be a light on a hill and model what undignified worship looks like by letting ourselves be passionate about our families, our work, the marginalized, justice, and ultimately the one who is holy and worthy. So what does undignified worship look like for you today? Well, the honest answer is, only you can answer that. You know what your levels of passion for Jesus are like, and you know what feels undignified for you and how much restraint you're applying. And it will be different for everybody. And unfortunately for some, it will actually require more courage than others. And it may look like raising hands in corporate worship, because that is how you're choosing to display your surrender to God and letting your passion rise. And if that is you, the good news is that you have some time to practice at home before we all get together and worship. And that will be a glorious day, let me tell you. For others, it may look like sacrificing some financial stability, perhaps, to give generously where they see help is needed. Or maybe it's to give your own personal time to serve those who are crying out for company and just to be valued. Whatever it is, it will require courage. It should cost us something, and it will bring humility. To some, it will cause offense, and in the eyes of many in the world, it will probably seem ridiculous and undignified. So what is your step of courage today? Is it to spend more time with Jesus fueling your passions? Is it to courageously let down your guard and become humble and undignified before him? Now, before I close, there were a couple of things I felt God was wanting to highlight today. I feel like he is saying someone had heard God speak in the past about pursuing passionately something, and when you did, it failed, or it appeared to have failed. It's left you asking, did I hear wrong, or did God do that on purpose to me? And I think what God is saying to you today is that he wants you to pursue that passion. He put that passion inside of you, and he has a plan. Don't give up, but do seek his guidance on how to move forward. And that is really important. I also think he's asking you, will you be courageous and prepared to look undignified in order to see this thing happen? I also felt that God wanted to speak to those who are struggling to feel maybe much in the way of positive emotion at all at the moment. It's possible that there have been some negative emotions that you've buried deep, and over the years that's left you feeling numb. Can you bring that in prayer to God? And if you need help, can I urge you to sign up for a prayer ministry today as a starting point? I also would love to hear from you, and if there's anything I can do, I'd love to be involved. My email address is david@belfastcityvineyard.com. Lastly, I feel there are some who know the passion God has placed in them has dwindled over the years because it's been restrained for so long. And it doesn't matter why we did it. Maybe it was because we were hurt. Maybe someone else ridiculed our undignified approach. Maybe we've told ourselves we didn't deserve to be passionate. Or maybe we've found it hard to humble ourselves and just say yes to God. But I believe he wants to rekindle your passion today. And he asks the question, will you say yes all over again? Now, if you're new to following Jesus, or maybe you've been doing it for a while, and all I have said just feels like it has gone over your head, or it's just very theoretical, but not your experience, can I encourage you to contact me? I would love to hear your thoughts, and I'd love to have a discussion and chat with you on it. I may not have all the answers to the questions you have, but maybe I can point you in the right direction. And I do have several starting points for us. So one is that you can get your hands on that book that I quoted from earlier by David Rees. And on our weekly service page, you'll find a link to it on Amazon. It's called The Worship God is Seeking. And it's a fantastic wee read. And it really does it really does stir passion in us again for God and for worshipping him. Another thing that you can do is join myself on Cath on our daily devotions. We are going to be specifically talking about worship over the summer. And then it's our hope to run a couple of Zoom calls over the summer as well, where we can explore what worship looks like in our lives. So keep an eye on social media for that coming up. So I just want to pray as we close. So let's just posture ourselves and receive from him. Lord, thank you for your holiness. Thank you that we get to meet with you intimately in worship, not because of something we've done, but because of all that you have done for us through Jesus. Forgive us when we take this for granted, and remind us of the joy of our salvation. Give us courage to humble ourselves in your presence, and let our passion for you to rise. We declare that we long to be a community that impacts the world around us. And so we say yes to looking even more undignified than this, so that your name may be glorified. Again, Lord, we ask for courage to become even more humble and even more servant-hearted. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message. For all the latest information about what's happening in the life of our church, or if you have any questions or comments, head over to BelfastCityVineyard.com.